Sacramento has a new tag team in the midday. It's Styles and Watkins on Sactown Sports.
916-339-1140. Before we get into Sam Amick's outstanding article, friend of the station, great guy, Sam Amick, let's get to Edward, who wants to be part of the conversation. What's up, Edward? What you got for us?
Well, guys, I have what might be a fairly tough question, but I have two good reasons for asking this question.
Okay.
I don't know if you'll know the answer. All teams are different, made up of different players with different interests. Some are students of the game who could tell you who every one of the 75 best players in history in the NBA was.
Mm-hmm.
And some couldn't tell you who Sam Jones was.
Right.
You know, so do we have any players on this team who are students of the game, who really know who everybody was and what they did?
Yeah, thanks for the call, Edward. Off the top of my head, I think if anybody, it would be Sabonis because of his pops. That's someone who's but I guess
I would think HB.
HB is another good one. I would, but the student of the game, that also kind of bleeds into, I guess, I don't want it to bleed into whether or not I think that they work hard, right? I mean, because that was a huge thing on Anthony Edwards coming out in the draft. How much does he love basketball?
Right.
Just because, you know, he's a young guy who just had other interests, right?
Sure.
And Anthony Edwards I haven't heard one person talk about that ever since he got into the league and started balling. But as far as, student of the game,
well,
I guess.
I would say, like, also, like, LeBron's student of the game is different than what De'Aaron's, like, just the different eras. Like, who LeBron would think of, back in my day versus who De'Aaron would say back in my day probably differs a lot. Like, De'Aaron back in my day is Allen Iverson, is, you know, Kobe and, you know, guys like that. For LeBron, it's actually, like, Jordan and all those guys. So it kind of depends. I feel like, you know, when you bring up the all NBA 75 list, I more bring that up to say I don't know if any of these guys can list 15 guys off the all NBA list, all 75, because I don't know how much modern players care that much about basketball history. Like, even Brandon Miller, we made fun of him this past offseason because they asked him who his GOAT is, and his answer was Paul George.
Right.
So, you know, that kind of is a symbolic of how these guys kind of frame NBA history.
Yeah, and also, and also, I'm not sure if Edward also meant as far as student of the game, as it pertains to learning the game,
sure,
and watching
like
film.
I can take from Tiny Archibald's game or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, I see a lot of myself, or I can add this move or that move or something like that. So
I think it's all relative.
It's all relative. Off the top of my head, I would say Sabonis, and I think it's a great call with HB.
But I wouldn't think anybody else. Like, I don't think De'Aaron doesn't really clock me as a basketball historian.
Right. Does student of the game mean historian?
Yeah. I would guess that's kind of the implication. Because, like, again, like, how much of it is I watch basketball my whole life, and, again, your whole life is different depending on who the player is, versus, no, I care about Bird and Magic in the 80s. I care about Oscar Robertson, all that stuff. I just kind of think it's more of a generational gap to where I just don't know how much in general any of these young hoopers really care. Like, I think it mattered a lot in LeBron's era. LeBron can definitely tell you a ton about NBA history, but I don't know how much Jason Tatum can tell you anything about 90s basketball.
You know, it is funny because even taking this outside of the basketball court, I don't know if I will ever get into this, but I was over the weekend, baby Styles was napping and wifey and I were just watching some music videos, very throwback thing to do. You got small spurts.
Yes.
I can't really watch a movie.
Right.
I don't really feel like
can't
watching
really
a show.
Can't really commit to anything.
Yeah, so, you know, let's just watch some movie music videos or something random like that. And when we went to the YouTube, there was people reacting. And she's not really on social media or locked in.
I heard this for the first time.
Well, they're sitting in their streaming chair.
Right, yes, yes.
Watch it. People are watching people watch stuff.
Yes.
And she was just, what are we doing here?
Sure.
What is it? And I said, it's a thing now. People watch people
watch
watching
things.
Stuff.
Right.
So I say all that to say, in the play-in game with the Heat and the Sixers, mm-hmm. when Batum was cooking the Heat, there's a streamer who's probably no older than 21, probably right. not, and the streamer is wearing a Heat jersey. He's got the normal stream set up. If you've either seen it or you've seen your kids watching these streamers, and the streamer had no clue who Nicholas Batum was, who's been in the league for right. probably 10 years.
Right.
And it was funny to me because these guys are making tons of money, these right. streamers, and they're talking about basketball. Yep. Other people their age, I would hope not older than them, are watching them and reacting right. to them, and they don't know anything about, yeah. they don't even know other rosters.
Right, yeah. It's incredibly frustrating. I've definitely peeked into, I mean, even like the biggest, like there's Flight Reacts and dudes
right.
like that.
Right,
it's like,
you're watching people watch
yes,
stuff.
Yes, Oprah Side used to be one way, way back. And yeah. I mean, it's just, I do think it's just a generational gap of, a lot of people, for whatever reason, I mean, I care tons about NBA history, but I just don't think that's a common thing. I don't think even like Kawhi Leonard, like I don't think guys of that era. I do think it's kind of a lost part of the NBA. Maybe it's something you get more as you age. You kind of have a more appreciation of those who came before you. But ultimately, yeah, I don't know how much any of these guys will say, you know, Bam Adebayo, oh, I took some things out of Bill Walton's game. I'm a big Bill Walton. Like, I think all of these guys, for the most part, their frame of reference is the guys that they've seen in their lifetime, which makes sense because you can't forget us as normal people. We love the NBA. We love the history of the NBA. We love it as a product. These guys are actually in it. They don't view it in that same way. They don't view it like, I mean, some of them, I think, have an appreciation for it, but they don't admire the NBA as much as what we all do. They like basketball, but not the NBA. We've heard a couple different guys talk about the difference of being able to play the sport versus liking the business side and all that comes with it.
Well, and the polls came out as far as the player polls, and they asked who is the best player of all time.
Right.
These are player polls guys in the NBA, and it's still Michael Jordan, but LeBron James is catching up.
Right on his heels.
So if what that tells you is that we're all getting older and these younger yes. players have seen more of LeBron
right.
and they're it's just different.
Yep.
To see live play versus highlights,
yes.
it's just different.
Yeah.
And the older we get, the players specifically, I think there will always be people that will have MJ over LeBron, but the older we get, these players that yep. barely saw Michael Jordan, if they barely saw Michael Jordan, do you think that they're studying all these other players that weren't
point.
As big as Michael yeah. Jordan, even if it's a Magic? They're not.
No, they're just not.
They're not.
Not.
And yeah. they don't have to,
no,
to
I
be
don't
completely
think so.
Honest with you.
Yeah, because the game is so far past that. And I don't know if anything that necessarily, I wouldn't say anything, but I don't know if a majority, if 90% of the things that used to work in the 80s or in the 90s would work today. Like maybe there's a couple, you know, situational things that you can peel from those guys. But ultimately, I just think the game is so different now and the way that it's played is completely different. I don't know how much you can really take from guys that are, you know, from before the 90s, really. I think that's a great point. And for to put a number to it as well, in that poll, 133 players voted. 45.9% said Michael Jordan. 42% said LeBron. So, I mean, that's like one or two vote difference between those guys. And I definitely think you're right. That definitely shows how much of it is just being able to see it with your own eyes versus, you know, watching the highlights and all that stuff. And I do think that's a great, great note there to mention that if these guys aren't even watching Michael, there's no way they're pulling up Dominique. There's no way
no.
they're pulling up Sean Kemp highlights or anything like that.
No, or Muggsy Bowe's my personal favorite.
That's right.
When we return, Sam Amick writes on a possible Mike Brown extension. We know everyone has had a lot to say on Coach Mike Brown this season. Where are you at on Coach Mike Brown? Should the Kings offer him an extension? And what that looks like. We hear from you when we return. 916-339-1140. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Live and local, it's Styles and Watkins. Watch the show on youtube.com/SacktownSports1140.
Or listen. listen on the Sacktown Sports app.
A great question, and obviously we know what we want. It's to keep Malik Monk, but the 916 asks, what players out there in free agency would be available at a similar pay if Monk were to leave? I just pulled up this Hoop Hypes, Chris, and we're going to do this.
It's kind of a complicated question.
Yeah.
Because they can't, they can't pay somebody else what they're going to offer Malik.
The number you have dialed is...
So what... So how does that, just quickly, just on the surface, if Malik were to walk, how much could they offer the Malik replacement?
12 mil a year is, is the max. Yeah, is the mid-level exception. They don't have cap space, so they can only offer Malik what they can because he fits into the bird rights. And besides that, all they can fit in is your mid-level exception, which I believe this season is about 12 mil, which is what you have Malik on right now, is a mid-level, or had him on, I guess. The season's over. The 2 years, 18 mil or 19 mil, that was on the previous mid-level exception.
So, just quickly, this is on Hoop Type, and they have Malik at number 13. But the names here are not going to be 12 million as far as the free agents. Again, this is only day one. So Chris and I's approach to today's show, you know, we love to pull back the curtain, was to obviously play the exit interviews and just give you a taste of what we're going to be giving you all off season long. There's obviously going to be a lot of Malik Monk talk, a lot of Mike Brown talk, which we're about to get into. But Tyrese Maxey, they have ranked number one. Chris, obviously you can't afford him. I believe the Sixers are going to do whatever they can to keep him. Paul George, number two. There'd have to be a trade involved there. LeBron James, number three. Pascal Siakam, who already said he's re-signing with the Pacers, number four. OG Anunoby, that ain't $12 million. That's number five. James Harden, that's not $12 million either. Number six. DeMar DeRozan, number seven. Tobias Harris, maybe he takes a pay cut, number eight. Miles Bridges, number nine. Nicholas Claxton, number 10. Emmanuel Quickly, he's a restricted free agent, number 11. D'Angelo Russell at number 12. Malik Monk at number 13. You get to, after that, Chris, okay, you do get to a Bruce Brown, all right, with a team option. Who knows what they're going to do there. They have Klay Thompson at 15. You know, Klay wants about 20-25. Valanciunas at 16. You get the point. So, oh, number 17, right when I was going to stop. Buddy Hield. At number 17.
Yeah, you should have stopped.
It's going to be a long offseason. As we turn from the guys on the court to the guys coaching, Sam Amick writes a great article on Mike Brown's possible extension. And Chris, I know we were going back and forth on this, and I will let you break it all down.
Yeah, so Sam wrote an article this morning, of course, for The Athletic, in which he pretty much detailed, it's really, really interesting, Mike Brown's extension and the possibility of it. And I'm going to read some quotes here, and then we're going to further elaborate. This is from directly from Sam's piece with The Athletic. There was organizational belief they could and should beat the Pelicans, who were playing without the injured Zion Williamson. And if initial mission was accomplished, they had enough talent to at least threaten the Oklahoma City Thunder in the first round of the NBA playoffs. So that's at least giving us some insight into what was the internal belief of this team. And apparently it's not only, or I guess what it was, the expectation of this team. And it was not only to make it out of the play-in, but to also make some noise in the playoffs. And we heard Malik earlier in his exit interview say he used, again, the term definitely would have been out there in a first-round series against OKC. We don't know which game that would have been, presumably game three or four, but we'll just never know. But the expectation was that the Kings were good enough to beat the Pelicans and to compete against OKC. They, of course, fell short of both of those goals. That's going to play a factor into what we're eventually going to talk about here later in this article. When asked, one veteran said despite the tangible step back, is there at least a level of stability developing? That veteran said, yeah, because we're not going to let go of our front office. We're not going to fire our coaching staff. In Sacramento, that's a pretty big deal. Now, with that said, Mike Brown, according to league sources, desires a long-term commitment at his market rate. Sam Amick put out today that team sources say there has been a wait-and-see approach from the ownership side on this point, with a feeling from those around the franchise that singular results, the huge win over the Warriors, the gut punch loss to the Pelicans, could weigh heavily into future decision-making. I will read that again. Team sources say there has been a wait-and-see approach from ownership from the ownership side to this point, with a feeling from those around the franchise that the singular results, the big win against the Warriors and the gut punch against the Pelicans, could weigh heavily into future decision-making. Sam gives his two cents and says that's a dangerous game to play. Ron Adive has not yet approached Brown with an extension offer. Both sides have known for months now that this discussion was nearing, but the outcome of it will set the tone for the Kings' seasons to come. Yet, while another team source says Brown will definitely return for next season, which I guess we can say is breaking news, the conversation about his value beyond the 24-25 campaign runs the risk of being complicated and potentially uncomfortable if Ron Adive is unwilling to reinvest in this partnership. So that, Alan Stiles, makes it sound like Mike Brown is officially on, I don't know, if the hot seat is a bit of a polarizing term, but I think that kind of classifies
Chris,
as hot,
it's the
seat.
Hot seat.
That's the hot seat, right?
It's hot
where
seat.
It's like you're officially on watch. You're on notice. I don't necessarily agree with it. I've made my feelings on Mike Brown be known throughout this season. I think it'd be insane to not re-up on what has been the most successful run that you've had in the past 16 years. But nonetheless, I guess it is in a weird way putting Mike Brown in a contract year and saying, hey, we think you're the guy, but we'd like you to show
yeah,
it.
Yeah, maybe just prove it. Prove
maybe
it
just
one more
prove
time.
It one more time. Prove it one more time, and then we're good. It doesn't bring a lot of confidence for guys like me who think Mike Brown should stay long term. Definitely leans a lot more. That to me is, I mean, what are the odds that things go bad? I mean, we saw things went bad this year. I think that there's a 10-15% chance things just go wrong next year, and that leads to Mike Brown being fired. It sounds like things can go relatively well, and Mike Brown still might be fired based off of if they lose big games,
if they do this next season,
yeah,
he will not be here
moving forward.
You have to make the playoffs.
I think that's the baseline, right?
Here's my question. Yeah. I don't know how the contracts line up, but, and we've seen this before.
Sure.
I know sometimes teams lay off guys in packages, GM and coach. Sometimes they don't. I don't know what Monty McNair's contract is off the top of my head.
He just got an extension last offseason.
So
with that extension, him and Mike Brown were aligned through 2026.
Yes.
That was the whole purpose of that extension.
If Mike Brown gets his extension.
No, Mike Brown's already through 26. It's past that.
When Brown was hired, it was a four-year contract. Mm-hmm. So the initial contract went through 26. Monty's contract was going to expire at the end of 23. He got a three-year extension. So
but if they're not willing to extend him, that might mean that they want to move on from him at the end of next season.
Yeah, very rarely does a coach or a GM ever go into a one-year contract.
I realize that. Interesting. I mean, I don't know if anybody saw this coming.
I kind of saw this coming. I definitely thought that if they didn't make the playoffs, we were going to hear hot seat rumors for sure. I thought it was going to be both of them, but I think we all knew that there wasn't going to be no consequences for them not making the playoffs. I thought this was always going to happen if they didn't make it, that they were going to threaten, you know, things are going to have to change. You can't just not make the playoffs and say, okay, no, it's fine. Like, you don't make the playoffs, we can't let you think that you can do this again next year.
But my thought process is, the reason I bring up Monty McNair is how much of this is, okay, let's give you the pieces and see what you're able to do with the pieces, which is why this offseason is so important. Because I don't think, I'll put it to you like this, I don't think Eric Spoelstra was winning a championship with this roster.
Sure, yeah.
So if he is viewed as one of the best coaches, Popovich, whoever you want to put in there, I think you have to see Coach Mike Brown with a better roster next season. And I think that's what they're assuming.
I think there's also an element of, hey, like we've seen, like, yes, you didn't have Malik and you didn't have Herter, but you throw out Eric Spoelstra. Like, we've seen Eric Spoelstra have Hayward Highsmith start in the finals.
And they did win without Tyler Herro and like, Jimmy Butler in Sacramento.
I think the argument is we feel like, yes, definitely the team played their part, but we don't necessarily know if you elevated the situation. And I think that's just, it's a scary situation to be in. Again, this team finally, even that veteran having that quote of, and by the way, that ask the veteran, there's like three guys who would probably be considered a veteran that would know about the Sacramento situation. Something tells me that's HB, by the way, by saying in Sacramento, that's a pretty deal. That sounds like somebody who has a history with this team. But yeah, I mean, I definitely don't think that's positive for this franchise, which has just been littered with instability year after year after year. Mm-hmm. You know, it just feels like, you know, we finally have one good year of success and then one off year where you still win 10 games above 500 could set it all back. It's just crazy how quickly things move. I'm not even saying this is wrong. Like I said, I kind of expected this, but it's just kind of crazy that things are that fickle.
Especially when you did lose a starter and your possible sixth man of the year. When we return, continuing the conversation, what are your feelings on Coach Mike Brown? Should he hang around or do you want him out of town? Siles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Live and local, it's Stiles and Watkins. Watch the show on youtube.com/SacktownSports1140.
Or listen on the Sacktown Sports app.
Chris, did you want to... Yeah, we got a note
from the
source, Sam Amick, and he hit us up because he is friend of the show, as we've mentioned. And yeah, there was a little bit of confusion. We were going back on the years with Coach Mike Brown. There is a mutual opt-out after next season.
Yep.
So it is not a contract through the next two seasons. Mutual opt-out after next season, which at that point would be we probably no longer are wanting your services if we don't. From the 916, and we see you, Ashley and Steven, we'll get to you. From the 916, this is crazy talk. Brown has been a revelation for this organization. How about address the players? The lack of defense, athletic players, lack of star power that isn't on the roster. Monty should be on the hot seat. I suppose a new GM might want to bring in his new coach.
From like not being around this situation too, does it seem crazy that this is a team that has found success and now is openly talking about maybe not bringing back their head coach? And, you know, yeah, people have, I would say, you know, have definitely equally been coming down Monty McNair's road as well.
Yeah.
Does that seem a little quick to you?
It's a tough situation. Ran it back because you felt like they earned it, and they've said that. They've been open about, oh, this team earned the right to run it back. And that's why it's always funny when people say, I just want to be competitive. And even in Sacramento, I just want to be competitive.
Because
were the case, then you would have had fun this season.
That's right. It
because
been a
you
blast.
Were still more competitive
and
than you had been.
There were some people out there, but
there were some people out there, but most
95,
people said.
95, 98%.
You know, I honestly think that 3-seed was a blessing and a curse. I think it was a blessing because of how much people in Sacramento enjoyed it. I think it was a curse because, let's be completely honest, you got hot and you were healthy and other teams weren't.
Yeah.
And realistically, you probably should have been a 5 or a 6 seed.
Probably.
Because becoming a 9 seed after a 5 or 6 seed doesn't look as bad as going from 3 to 9.
To
even
out,
though,
pretty much. Yeah.
Right, to out. And even though we can be honest and say, you know, it's a crazy, it's just two completely different seasons.
Right.
Throughout the Western Conference, you had a really down season last season. Then you had a ridiculous season this season. So there's multiple things at play here. I don't think anybody should be on the hot seat until the end of next season. Yeah.
In a weird way, running your own race has never been harder, right?
Where
it's like you try and focus on only what you're doing, but you kind of can't because of all the competition that's running around you, and you have to, I mean, you've said it tons of times, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And yeah. I think that has never been more clear and evident than in this Western Conference, where if you're staying stagnant, there's so many teams around you that are just constantly getting better, looking to improve, or at least know which direction they're going. And the Kings right now, I mean, yeah, the Ringer article, a lot of it was pretty much centered on how do you get out of the middle? Because
yeah.
that's honestly the worst thing you can be is figuring
it's right. Me in the middle.
How do you figure out how to at least establish which side you're going to be on? Of course, the Kings want to be on the good side, but you know, when we talk about this team not having enough talent, that's where you have to wonder, like, to your point, did they get good too early and convince themselves that the talent was already there, when in reality, we look at the 8-seed New Orleans Pelicans and we say, I don't know if we have as much talent as them.
No. And look, the way I see it is, if you're Monty McNair and you start to see the writing on the wall, if, okay, they're not extending Coach Mike Brown, or they haven't even began those conversations yet. We've heard, with all these podcasts now, you know I love them, we've heard former GM say, well, I made this move because if it doesn't work, I'm gone anyway. That right. would, if you are someone that doesn't want, and Kevin O'Connor, who he still hasn't responded to my DMs, he put out, you need to start thinking about moving Keegan Murray. That's what I start thinking about. Does that cross anybody's mind?
Sure.
If you're Monty McNair, I mean, I got to take
if
a big swing here.
You
want to
be serious
here.
About winning.
If I want to, yeah, if y'all want me to
like
win.
Like winning.
Now.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Now,
yes.
Then how could Keegan not be on the table?
Absolutely.
Because if we can keep Keegan, we don't make a leap, and then I'm out of a job.
Exactly.
So this thing could get real spicy. 916-339-1140. Let's go to Ashley, who wants to be a part of the conversation. What's up, Ashley? What you got for us?
Hey, so I'm going to go a little bit JJ Redick here and say, if we get rid of Mike Brown, short of something where we're like a 9, 10 seed, 11 seed, and it's not because of something like a De'Aaron Fox goes out for the year mm-hmm. or something like that, it's franchise malpractice, if you will. I think that it'd be crazy to get rid of Mike Brown because he's, I believe, second, if not our third winningest head coach of all time. So short of something where, like I said, we're like really, really bad like we used to be, or we're getting someone like a Popovich, or we're getting not Bill Belichick, but you know, like someone mm-hmm. like that in the NBA rings, I say it's franchise malpractice.
Yeah, thanks for the call, completely. Ashley. I think it would be tough because you have to understand where you're at as an organization. And you finally, you might not be where you want to be, but you're finally in the conversation. And yeah. and maybe that's not where you want to be forever, but I do think that after, what would that be? What, three? That would be after 3 years of, and all he did was go to the playoffs and then go to the play-in and then whatever happens after next season, it, you move on from that, especially if it's the same roster. And I, you know, I've been on these Grizzlies and these other teams yeah. that we didn't even talk about this season. If you don't make any moves, and there are people out there that think Kevin Huerter's saying, so if you do run it back to some degree, or you lose HB and make one move and you miss the playoffs again, I think it really depends on how you yeah. miss it. If you miss it like this and there's injuries, look, I hate to use the word fair in sports because things aren't fair, but I don't think yeah. that would directly be on Mike Brown, but some people would see it like that. 916-339-1140. Let's go to Steven, who wants to be part of the conversation. What's up, Steven? What you got for us?
Not much, boys. So this Mike Brown talk has kind of got me, I wouldn't say a little fired up, but I don't think it's necessarily fair. I mean, granted, it's off season. You know what I'm saying? It's mm-hmm. all part of the talks and everything. I completely get it. But I feel like another caveat is just like that text was said, man. I feel like Monty McNair is just as equal because he did not – I have been super adamant and super hard on Monty because he did not. I'm one of those where I feel like he should have made moves because everyone else in the West has been making moves and we stay stagnant, just like the points that you guys have been making. I feel like Monty McNair definitely should be just as equally responsible as Mike Brown, even though Mike Brown is the coach. Monty, you're supposed to give Brown the players mm-hmm. and be like, here's what I got for you. Here's what I have sourced for you. These are the players that I feel like will be successful and that will work best for you. And it is up to those players at that point in time to execute the coach's game plan. There are a lot of hand-in-hands here as far as the points that I'm making, but my main point is that Monty should be just as equally responsible, or he is the guy that builds the roster. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, thanks for the call, Steven. I'm personally giving Monty McNair a pass because after you break that drought, breaking the drought or ending the drought and the ridiculous market thanks to the Minnesota Timberwolves is why I'm giving Monty McNair a pass for this trade deadline.
Yeah.
Now we have to see what happens during this summer.
Yep.
And that's where I'm at with Monty McNair. And then after what happens with Monty McNair and the roster, that will determine where I will be at
exactly.
with Coach Mike Brown.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's where I can't really speak. I'm just, after 16 years, you go to the playoffs. I get it. I get why they did it. And on top of the fact that, what, you want a first rounder for this guy who's coming off the bench? I mean, what are we talking about here? The market.
Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington did Dallas wonders the other day.
Yeah. Yeah.
They
seriously.
Really glad they risked it all for that.
And now you have people saying, well, he should have done this, should have done that. Well, look, we know what the price tags are. You can't have, everybody knows what the value of HB and Herter is right now. So unless you're ready to move Keegan Murray, which nobody wants to do, you can't have it all. But this is why Monty gets paid the big bucks. Not that we're pocket watching. Yeah. You got to figure it out.
Yeah, no. And I'm to Ashley's point earlier about, and I think it's a fantastic point, and it's something I've been wondering too. Like, you want to get Mike Brown out of town. Who are you bringing in? Because if you're kicking him out, I would assume you don't want to take a risk on a young, hot name. You're not looking for the Sean McVay of coaches anymore. You're not looking for the young upstart guy, because if you get that wrong, you throw away this timeline. You got to get in a guy who's ready to win right now. Mike Brown is number 48 on the all-time coaching wins list. So that means that we have like 47 guys who have more wins, who have a better pedigree than Mike Brown. And how many of these guys are also ancient or no longer with us? Like, you have Byron Scott.
How many are still coaching?
Byron Scott's got more wins. He's two higher on the leaderboard. You got, obviously, Mike Malone, but he's not going anywhere. Frank Vogel, he's probably not going anywhere. You have Mike Budenholzer. You have Dwayne Casey. Terry Stotts. Alvin Gentry, funny enough, he's not coming out of the booth.
These guys,
Stan Van Gundy.
We've seen this movie before.
Yeah, like all of these are Mike D'Antoni, Nate McMillan. None of these guys are really moving the radar for you if
you'd
you're the
have
Kings.
To take a like, chance. Chris.
These are, and it just doesn't make the sense to me. Mike Brown is the youngest guy who also has the pet. Like, Mike Brown is the perfect guy right now. I don't know where you would go.
The only one of the names you listed that's moving the needle is Budenholzer, and even that compared to Mike Brown is like there's a conversation there.
Right.
Like, it's
that's
just change.
Still,
you can argue that's change for the sake of change.
Right. That's like those graphs that you see when you say, do you want this person to stay or leave? And it all says red. It's all red, and then there's a piece that says yellow, and it says yes, but also in yellow.
Yes,
it's just the same thing.
Exactly.
It's the same thing.